I'm Rich Egger, and this is Emphasis. Today's guest is Aline Rushell, who is retiring as Macomb School Superintendent. And in fact, this is the end of a long career in education. How did you get your start?
How did I get my start? Well, I graduated with a BA in history, political science, and geography from here from Western. I did my student teaching at Macomb High in 71, so everybody can do the math real quick. My supervising teacher was Miriam Riggins. After that, Paul was in baseball, of course, and we did a lot of traveling, so I did a lot of substituting. I substituted for 6 years, long-term subs, subbing situations at Camp Point Central, which, of course, was our home base, you know, when we weren't in baseball. When I had an opportunity when Paul and I were over in Venezuela to do some tutoring and visit schools in Venezuela. It was really interesting, Rich, you know, when we were over in South America at the time, we would have various functions, and the function, you know, a family social event always ended with dinner. And it was interesting because if they found out I was a teacher, they would then move my seat to a place of honor next to the host. And I always found that interesting how they valued teachers.
That doesn't happen in this country, does it?
Oh, I think it does to some degree. I think right now it's difficult. I think that has more to do with the times that we are in right now from an economic standpoint. True teachers, as in any profession, those who value the profession and value children, I think deep down understand what it's all about. And I think people who understand education and value children deep down value teachers. Everybody's an expert, Rich. Everybody has gone to school, and the kinds of experiences that those individuals had obviously colors their perception of what's taking place today. But the school that we find today is far different than the school we had 40 years ago, 20 years ago.
Has it changed that much in 20 years?
Oh, absolutely.
How?
Absolutely.
How so?
Okay, well, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, when I started moving into admin from the classroom, one of my goals in many of the schools was just to make sure we had overhead projectors in every room. Today, we, you know, back in the 90s, I started, you know, we started with mobile labs, and we had to put power poles in and look like spider webs when we were running cords to everybody. And moving into those kinds of things has drastically changed the way we look at things. Everything is instant now. Good, bad, or indifferent, social media definitely has had an impact. It's not that anyone wants to be secretive, but in the same token, we sometimes need a minute to formulate our thoughts, to make an explanation. We can't necessarily just every 2 seconds, you know, get out a blurb about this or get a blurb mm-hmm. about that. I think from that perspective, it's changed. I think it's one of the most exciting times that we find ourselves in. I can't tell you the number of times I've shared with people, I wish I were 50 again right now, because we are at a crossroads in education. And some people say, oh, that's scary. But I look at it as a challenge in exciting times, as impactful as it was at the turn of the century when Dewey came on the scene and put in the systems that we all grew up in. From that perspective, it's going to be different. Walls are crumbling. You know, you read Friedan's book about, you know, the world being flat.
Mm-hmm.
It's true. It truly is true. The kinds of experiences that we can provide kids is absolutely phenomenal, and I think the opportunities are limitless. And, yeah, I find that extremely exciting, but I also am a realist and understand the challenges that that will bring.
Yeah, and what about this technology? Computers, mm-hmm. tablets, et cetera, mm-hmm. do they make children better learners?
No device is going to be a magic wand. Everybody's looking for that infamous silver bullet. I think 6 years ago, you and I talked about silver bullets then.
Mm-hmm.
What it does, what a technology can do for some student is no different than a tape recorder did or some other things. And that is maybe expedite or allow something to be more immediate. But the greatest single factor in the room is a caring, knowledgeable professional working with each and every student and recognizing that each student is different. That's nothing new. That was something that we talked about in the 80s when I was working at the when I was an educational consultant for the state board. My office was at the old dairy, actually. We talked about differentiation then. That hasn't changed. Good teachers have been differentiating RTI, XYZ, ABC since the beginning of time because they look at each individual and say, what are the gifts that God's given you and how do I help you expand on those gifts and what things are kind of difficult for you? I used to differentiate my classrooms, and the way I'd explain it is this way. You might be very good in grammar, Rich. So when we're doing grammar, I was teaching sophomore English at the time, I might give you this kind of an exercise because this is what you needed to expand your knowledge while over here, Allie and Russell, you struggle. We're going to do something here. But then again, when we're in Shakespeare, we're in literature, maybe Allie and Russell was really, you know, really understood that and can do that, and you struggled. So I gave you something different to help you so that you could be a participant in that class as well. It's just good teaching.
Did this change the way the classroom is structured at all, or the way the teacher interacts with the students?
I think that's happened throughout the world, and I think that's happened even years ago. Good teaching is good teaching. Good teaching means engagement. It doesn't mean you're like the reach toothbrush and we're going to, you know, rip open your head and pour information. It's not about memorization. It's about thinking. That's going to be frightening for some. When we look at the Common Core and we talk about mathematics and mathematics standards, it's really about higher order thinking. Benjamin Bloom began in 1965. You know, he came out with his taxonomy, you know, Bloom's tax. Well, if you look at what the Common Core is doing, it's just taking Ben Bloom and saying, okay, let's stop looking at those first three and let's look at the other three. There were six, basically. Now they have another one with technology. But the point I'm getting at is that we're looking at those higher order. You've got to be able to think. You have to be able to reason. You have to be able to explain. Good teaching was always about that.
We've been talking about teaching, but mm-hmm. you eventually got into school administration.
I did.
Why did you decide you wanted to give that a try?
I didn't realize I did. I was doing a workshop in Pittsfield, Illinois. I was working on a writing workshop. I was at that time education consultant with the state. I was with the ESC 18. And I got a call from Hobson Bale, superintendent at Liberty. And frankly, I had just been accepted the PhD program at Southern. And he said, Lynn, I want you to come down here. I want to talk to you about something. And so I came down after my workshop, and he said, I want you to get your credentials in. I said, what are you talking about? He said, we've got an opening here. I said, Hob, I don't have an admin certificate. He says, you can go back. We'll make you head teacher. But we need you here. So I talked to my family. It meant less traveling. It was 30 miles down, you know, 25 miles down the road. I could stay in Golden. And so I went to Liberty Elementary School. 450 kids, pre-K through 8, and I started going to school here at Western, either here in Macomb or up at the Quads, depending on which weekend it was, to get my administrative degree, and I'm grateful for the help that the admin department provided me in getting that accomplished. And I started my admin career, basically because it was at a time when school improvement was just starting. They were concerned about early standards and curriculum and how to go about making sure that their kids were learning at a level which we all felt was important. And so I walked into that and fell in love with those 450 kids and stayed there 7 years. And in that time, I also was high school principal. We had a transition, and so it was late year, and our board president, Donnie McCleary, came to me and said, Aline, I know you're at the high school, but you're also doing the grants and you're doing the lunch program and you're a transportation director. Well, we also need you to be high school principal until we can get somebody. I said, okay, I'll do that for a year. So then I had 750 kids, you know, and it worked. And I just something that, you know, you never know where life's going to lead you. It's not very theological, but it's actually from The Sound of Music where Paul always says, you know, where the head... Mother Superior, talks to Maria, and she says, when God closes a door, he opens a window somewhere. Well, that's just kind of how my career went. I thought I was going to teach, and Paul was going to play baseball, and then we were going to buy a farm, and that was going to be our life. And life went different ways, and uh-huh. It's okay.
As an administrator, you probably have to deal with finances quite a bit.
Yeah, I did.
Were you prepared for that?
I knew it was going to be a lot of that, and I think you grow into that position and you recognize that. And I think it's about common sense and caring. A lot of times when Paul and I were, when we were first married and we'd try and sit down with paper and pencil and the budget didn't always work. Well, okay. You kind of have to have some faith. It's kind of like, you know, when you learn in Sunday school, you have to take a leap of faith. Well, a lot of times that's what it is. You put what's important first. And if you keep kids first and you put every decision that you make with a child in mind, with a face in mind, you're going to come out okay. But that's what we're all about. And so you just are very careful. You're very prudent. And if I felt I didn't understand something, I went and I found people that had more knowledge than me and were gracious enough to help me along the way.
You've mentioned Paul a couple times. He's a former Major League Baseball pitcher.
He is.
With the Cubs and the Indians.
Yes.
You told me a couple months ago that the two of you plan to start visiting Major League Baseball parks.
We do. We're going to start.
Can you talk about that?
Sure. Well, I met Rushi here. That's okay. We're married 43 years. We married 44 here in November. And Paul got to Paul was lucky. Paul was able to actually pitch, literally pitch in every major league ballpark in the country because he was a reliever.
Every park that existed
at that time,
30 years ago.
That's right. And things have changed. There are still four remaining, but one of our dreams has always been, because we have friends throughout the country, you know, and there are still fellas in baseball that we contact. And so one of our dreams has always been, we want to go back to all the ballparks one more time, go back to every city, go back to every ballpark. And we recognize so many have changed, but there are still four. And we will do that. And we'll start our trip this fall. We're doing we've got a niece being married, and so we're going to start and pick up three or four parks before the wedding and after the wedding. And so it'll take us a couple of years, but we're looking forward to it.
And the four parks that still exist?
Well, obviously Wrigley.
Uh-huh. And Fenway.
And Fenway. Keep going.
Dodger Stadium.
Good job.
And the one in Kansas City.
And the one in Kansas City. You've done your homework well. You remembered well. Yeah, those are the four. You know, it was interesting because when we were in Kansas City at the time, you know, that was one of the brand new parks, you know. And now it's one of the grand old parks. But it'll be fun.
It's interesting that a game that is so much about tradition – that there's been such a turnover in ballparks just in the last 30 or 40 years, that only four of them still exist from a relatively short time ago.
Well, I think what's happening in professional sport is no different than what's happening in education. You know, that which served us well for many years, and we're grateful for it, maybe can't be renovated anymore. I mean, there's only so much you can do with infrastructure. There's only so many ways that you can rearrange a room, and sometimes it just is time to say thank you very much, but it's kind of like, what is it? Was it Bob Hope? Thanks for the memories, and move on. I think it's the same thing. Look at Macomb High School. Macomb High School, when I was student teaching, held 1,200 students and seemed to hold those 1,200 students with relative ease. That was a brand new state-of-the-art high school. Yet today we have around 900, and when sometimes we're scrambling for space. Now, why is that? What's changed? Well, it's how we teach, what we need for those spaces. I think it's no different with professional sport or with anything. Look at movie theaters years ago, and I'll look at them today. They're far different.
Aline Rushell is the retiring superintendent of the Macomb School District. We've run out of time for today. Thanks for joining us, and enjoy your retirement.
Thank you very much. It's been an honor to be here.
For Tri-State's Public Radio News, I'm Rich Egger.